This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 28th of September, 2018. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. We'll begin with the usual regular notices, and the first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 02038027 3473. That's 02038027 3473. As you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. And just one more reminder, this is for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's all lowercase, no spaces, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, so the most recent is the first on the list. And so, let's have a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And David Baldwin.
Hello.
Who is sitting in for Peter Walker, who's on holiday, so thank you, David. I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. And so, on to the news. The leading headlines this week are Waste Collection Fears Rubbished, Health Trust Told They Must Improve, Lib Dems / Tory Majority. And the first headline story comes from Claire, please.
Waste collection fears rubbished. Civic chiefs in Winchester have denied being left in a difficult position after it was revealed East Hampshire District Council, EHDC, decided not to renew its bin collection partnership with the City Council. The decision was revealed in a report before an EHDC meeting last week. Until then, discussions between the councils had been held behind closed doors. It means that WCC will now have to find a new partner before October 2019, when the current 8-year contract will come to an end. According to the report, a decision to partner with Havant Borough Council instead was made by councillors over the summer, with a meeting agenda showing a key decision was made on July the 31st regarding waste services. Winchester Liberal Democrat councillor Martin Todd said the move leaves Winchester City Council in a difficult position. Councillor Todd added, "Waste contracts are very complex to negotiate, and we're running out of time. I'm particularly concerned about getting doorstep glass recycling for people in Winchester. It's not in the current contract, and there's no deal or contract with anyone from October 2019 onwards. It's a critical Lib Dem priority to make sure that doorstep glass recycling is part of any new contract. However, Conservative Environment Portfolio Holder Councillor Jan Warwick said, "This is a great opportunity for the Council to award a more responsive and efficient contract that will mean a much better service for local residents, and we will be making sure we get the best possible value for money." The partnership with East Hampshire has been successful, but there were a few problems about the sheer scale of the operation that meant it was not always responsive enough. We have already pledged to improve our waste collection with the promise to collect glass from the curbside. This move is further evidence we are serious about making the service even better and more local, because that is what residents want. Currently, waste services in the district and East Hampshire are carried out by firm Biffa under the deal agreed in 2011. Speaking to the Chronicle, Councillor Todd also said taxpayers should have been made aware of the decision sooner. People have the right to know what's being done in their name by the council with their money as soon as it happens. It's a disgrace that it's taken so long to become public. Council leader Councillor Caroline Horrell defended the way the process had been handled, saying that the authority had been completely transparent. Under the Local Government Act, councils have the right to exclude members of the public and press from commercially sensitive discussions.
Health Trust told it must improve. The Health Trust in charge of Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital has been told it must improve following a review. It comes after a report by the Health Watchdog, the Care Quality Commission, found shortfalls in the way it manages safety, effectiveness and responsiveness at its hospitals, which also include the North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke and Andover War Memorial Hospital. Now, the Care Quality Commission, following its inspection, is using its urgent enforcement powers to impose conditions on the trust. They include putting in place an effective system to assess and monitor the ongoing care and treatment of patients while in the emergency department, ensuring there are enough suitably qualified staff on duty in the emergency department at all times to care for children, ensuring children and young people are cared for in an environment which is tailored to meet and protect their needs, ensuring at least one member of staff trained in advanced paediatric life support is available on each shift, ensuring there are enough qualified, skilled and experienced staff deployed throughout the emergency department, with staffing levels being reviewed and adapted at regular intervals throughout the day. And the Trust must submit a report to the CQC that demonstrates the conditions have been complied with. Professor Ted Baker, Chief Inspector of Hospital, said, "We have now made it clear to the Trust where it must take action to improve. We will remove these conditions when we are satisfied that the Trust has made sufficient progress to provide the quality of services that its patients are entitled to expect." Inspectors found that not all areas were effectively managing infection risks, and patients' privacy and dignity were not always protected. During the inspection, there were patients being treated on corridors without access to a patient bell, who found it difficult to get help from nursing staff. The CQC also found that the board were not always aware of the risks, issues and challenges in the service, and managers were not always seen to take action to address behaviour and performance that was inconsistent with the Trust's vision and values. Professor Baker added, "I'm pleased to note that we did see some outstanding practice and the Trust has a strong and engaged workforce. Although it is concerning to find that some staff did not feel able to safely raise concerns or that these were not being addressed." The report released yesterday comes a day after Winchester MP Steve Brine, who is also the government's public health minister, met with the Trust's chief executive, Alex Whitfield. He said, "This report is worrying, but I don't think it comes as a huge surprise because of the pressures our emergency department has been under and the ageing building it inhabits. What we must not do in response is sensationalise the findings or join the dots in a way that draws the wrong conclusions, because many dedicated and caring people work at the hospital and they deserve the space and the support to turn things round. Many of my constituents attending the emergency department, and indeed myself as a patient with my son recently, report a positive experience at our hospital, and certainly the NHS's version of TripAdvisor backs that up. Although the Trust has been rated as requires improvement, overall inspectors found that caring at the Trust was good. chief executive said, "I'm glad that the inspectors recognise the dedication and compassion of our staff. However, it is disappointing that there are a number of areas where our services are not consistently at the standard we would want. We take the safety of our patients and their care very seriously, and we've already made changes responding to the conditions highlighted by the inspectors and have further improvements planned. We will continue to work tirelessly to put patient care and safety at the heart of everything we do." A spokesman for the Trust added, "The report highlighted a number of areas of excellent practice, including the Trust's dementia services and world-class cancer services for cytomyxoma."
Lib Dems / Tory majority. Winchester's ruling Conservatives are celebrating after retaining the Upper Meon Valley ward, but were pushed closer than expected after strong showing from the Liberal Democrats. Lewis North, candidate for the Lib Dems, received 905 votes, slashing the Tory majority from 882 to 124, a swing of over 20%. The by-election for the City Council, which was sparked by the resignation of Councillor Amber Tresaha, formerly Councillor Thacker, saw Tory Hugh Lumby elected last Thursday. Councillor Lumby said, "I would like to thank voters for continuing to put their trust in this Conservative administration by electing me. These are exciting times, and the City Council has a radical agenda to regenerate our district, improve our services, and put this authority on an even better financial footing. Other parties cannot do this, so they undertake a negative campaigning in the absence of any fresh ideas. Conservatives here in Winchester are quite the opposite. We are positive, we have fresh ideas, and have already delivered affordable homes, a new bus station, and balanced books with much more to come." Council leader Caroline Horrell added, "I welcome Hugh to the council. He will be an excellent advocate for the Upper Meon Valley and an excellent addition to the Conservative ranks." Meanwhile, Lib Dem candidate Lewis North, who grew up and lives in Cheriton, said he is eyeing another crack at the City Council in May's local elections. Mr. North said, "People want something different. We manned a positive campaign and in a four-week period came close against an unassailable Tory majority. It just shows that Winchester is winnable for the Lib Dems. I'm really delighted and I'll probably have another crack in May. There are Liberal people here that want a younger voice." Lib Dem City Councillor Martin Todd added, "We are disappointed not to win. The huge swing of 21% shows more and more people want change. We had a great candidate and that helped, but we spoke to a lot of people on the doorstep and there was more to it than just that. There is frustration that just as the Tories are making a mess nationally, they are making a mess locally." For Labour, June Kershaw got 39 votes, while the Green, Andrew Wainwright, got 31.
Thank you very much, everybody. And we're going on to the death notices now. Appleton, Alan James Appleton, passed away peacefully on the 18th of September, aged 82.
Blunden, Daphne Jean Blunden, passed peacefully on 20th September, aged 87.
Fiddler, Lydia Christine Chris Fiddler, sadly passed away on the 9th of September, aged 84.
Fuchs, Barbara Fuchs, passed away peacefully at home on the 19th of September, aged 88 years.
Hamilton, Helen Hamilton, sadly passed away with her family present on the 15th of September, aged 76.
Lawton, Stella Margaret Lawton, formerly of Winnell Manor Road, passed away 12th of September, aged 85.
Lowe, Victoria Lowe, died on the 14th of September, aged 86.
Mould, Joe Mould, died peacefully on the 21st of September, aged 87.
Rickman, Robin William Rick Rickman, died peacefully at home, aged 84.
Robertson, Elizabeth Robertson, died peacefully on 13th September.
Wallace Joyce Mary, née Benham, passed away at home in Winchester on the 18th of September, aged 96 years.
White, Albert Bert White of Bishop Sutton, passed away on the 17th of September 2018, aged 92.
Thank you, everyone. Moving on now to Christian comments, and Claire is going to read the contribution by Rosemary Baker, please.
Yes, Rosemary Baker. She has headed it, A Worrying Trend for Young People. Last week, I attended a health education workshop. We were a motley crew, chosen at random by date and proximity to the venue. We were a mixture of retired and working folk with a student. We were also of different racial origins and both genders. We had to introduce ourselves, and I chose to say I was a retired psychiatrist, thinking it would be less of a problem than saying I was a doctor, and I omitted to say I was also a minister. The beginning was a bit boring, but I still did learn some useful facts. We were about 30 minutes from the scheduled end point, and we had discussed nearly everybody's individual problems when the student's turn came. To our amazement, she burst into tears, saying she had been bullied whilst away from home at university because of her weight. She didn't even look particularly overweight to me, but clearly it was a matter of grave concern to her, such that she felt suicidal. She told us of all her endeavours to try and lose weight, which had been to no avail. The professionals running the group tried to help her. Everyone had an eye on the clock with thoughts of car park timings and traffic. I had told myself I was retired, and I was there to learn before we started, but felt something was expected of me. The new university year is about to start, and apparently they are vying with each other with how much mental health support they have available. There have been a number of instances of suicide in the news recently. Some young people have problems even before they got to university. The age for suicide seems to be getting worryingly younger. There is a huge shortfall in the resources provided for young people with emotional and mental problems by the NHS. There are long waiting lists as well as a mismatch with adult services. I had my share of bullying at primary school, but luckily none to speak of in the rest of my education. A university a long way from home, there were difficult times, but friends, family phone calls and letters and cake parcels saw me through. I was greatly helped by friends and fellowship at Meth Society, although not really feeling part of the rest of the church at that time. I was grateful for the link arranged by the minister at my home church, even though I didn't go. Hospitals and asylums were originally provided by the church. I wonder what part the church, and indeed Christians, could play to help our young people today. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
And on we move to letters to the editors. A bit of a mixed bag of letters this week. And we've selected 12 for you. And David will start us off with the first, please.
Über alles. So, in his article Burkas and Brexit, Chronicle, September the 6th, Steve Brine wrote, President Macron will ultimately decide whether the EU itself compromises and we have ourselves a deal. A slip of the pen, surely. Shouldn't that read Chancellor Merkel? Since when did Germany allow France, or any other EU country for that matter, to decide anything? Karen McCleary, Hookpit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
The This letter from David Simons is headed Lib Dems Hands Off King Alfred. It was with some amusement that I spotted this Lib Dem poster in a window in Cannon Street, and it is also all over the Lib Dem party website. I wonder why the party has appropriated our own dear King Alf. After all, he was known for defending Wessex against Viking invaders and for being the first king of the English, for being indeed the founder of the English nation-state. But just for fun, let's consider if King Alfred would have been a leaver or a remainer. Undoubtedly, as a boy, he travelled to Rome, and in those days the Pope held sway over a common Catholic Europe of which the Kingdom of Wessex was a part. The Vikings, however, were pagans and were merciless killers, wanting domination, not cohabitation. If Alfred were alive today, would he have supported the Lib Dem policy of seeking a second referendum, despite having been told by the then Lib Dem leader Nick Clegg that the referendum in 2016 was a once-in-a-generation vote? Alfred would have seen himself as a supporter of a Christian Europe, of shared Christian values, but would he have shared the values of the EU? It is doubtful, but not impossible. The last time Britain was isolated in a trade war was in Napoleonic times. It might behove us to recall that time in which Napoleon tried to enforce a European-wide economic blockade against Britain in the 1800s. For Napoleon, might one now substitute President Macron, flanked by a glowering Frau Merkel? All of us, Remainer and Brexiteer alike, must hope not. Would King Alfred have buckled against such enmity? Would he have kicked against the pricks? Lib Dems, may I ask for our King Alfred logo to be given back? It's not yours to use. David Simons, Sleepersdale Gardens, Winchester.
Lucinda Pillow complains about bad behaviour. Sir, I've just volunteered for the first time as a marshal at the Winchester Half Marathon. While I thoroughly enjoyed the event and the fun most people were having, it was marred by the awful behaviour of a minority of people. Impatient drivers trying to ignore the road closures and mow me down in the process, and angry residents coming out to complain and blame it all on me. While I understand the inconvenience this event could have on local residents, they're all given fair warning of road closures, and there's absolutely no justification for speaking to either runners or marshals in such an aggressive manner. Most runners take part for charity, and marshals are giving up their free time to stand in the rain and help. I myself am a local resident, penned in by the event, but my attitude is that the race is here to stay, and if you can't beat 'em, join 'em. The behaviour of these locals was off-putting and let down their communities where most people were out of support. I would like to help out again, but not at the risk of losing my enjoyment or even my life. Lucinda Pillow, Kingsgate Road, Winchester.
This letter comes from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston, and is entitled Unsatisfactory. Sir, the speech to the National Housing Federation was clear. We must stop our sneering attitude to social housing tenants. Whoa, I never did have a sneering attitude. But using a virtual claim to silence and ignore genuine concerns is a ballot box loser. A small estate including an element of social housing was built in Bolton in 1991, with units selling at £40,000. 10 years later, those houses were selling at £23,000, the estate blighted by just two criminal families. The great majority of residents found it difficult to be proud in the face of official inaction. Is Bolton different? Drinking and pot smoking on the doorstep have been observed in central South Wanston. Winchester City Council wants to bust the settlement boundary of South Wanston onto Greenfield for social rentals. The provisions of rural exception are to be gamed up inappropriately to escape proper planning. South Wanston is hardly rural, with a population only slightly less than the central city wards. Nor is it isolated. All of Wick, Littleton, Sutton Scotney, Barton Stacey, Micheldever, and especially Kings Barton are nearby. How is it that despite Kings Barton, with its included infrastructure, South Wanston is to be forced open without added infrastructure? Claims that the development is a one-off are not believed. The most cursory look at a map shows that developments of up to 200 houses on the east end of the village will inevitably follow. The behaviour of the parish council has been deeply unsatisfactory. To one South Wanston parish council meeting, the question was, if you don't represent us, who does? Hurrah for the parish councillor who had the integrity to resign over the parish council's conduct. Who would have thought that the decline of Western liberal democracy, because of its bullying, illiberal, undemocratic nature, would be writ so plain in South Wanston?
Any answers? A short burst at full throttle, in low gear and at low speed, can even make someone with bad hearing jump. Some motorcyclists will be inclined to enjoy the effect on others, and as high speed is not required to create a high volume, it will be challenging to find a viable solution, chronicles September the 20th. It would be interesting and indeed revealing to understand if anyone, regardless of political persuasion, would solve the problem. Personally, I like the sound of a Harley-Davidson when being driven gently, typically by the more senior folk, but the opposite applies to the harsh noise generated by needlessly applying full throttle. What practical and enforceable ideas does any political party member have to stop the more selfish motorcyclists inflicting noise on residents? On the positive viewpoint, perhaps an incentive could be considered. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Vincent Chambers picks up the theme in a letter entitled MPs Whinge. Sir, I was one of the 8,945 people who received a letter from George Hollingbury, Chronicle September 20. When I saw the House of Commons envelope, I thought, ah, presumably the government is seeking my advice about the Brexit shambles, or perhaps about how best to reform the NHS, or some other issue of national importance. When I saw that the letter was from Mr. Hollingbury, I thought, ah, perhaps it's about these issues of greatest concern locally, such as the appallingly bad broadband speeds I suffer, or perhaps it's fly tipping that he's concerned about. But no. Mr. Hollingbury's letter, a full 2 pages of it, was a whinge about something of concern only to the fuddy-duddies who live near the A32 and A272 roads, namely, motorbike noise. Mr. Hollingbury's letter arrived a couple of days before the election for the Upper Meon Valley ward, where Hugh Lumby was standing as the Conservative candidate. Mrs. Hollingbury and Lumby clearly are chums. About half of Mr. Lumby's election circular was devoted to motorbike noise. Mr. Lumby's interest in this derives from the fact that he lives 2 fields away from the A32 and so am directly affected by the motorbike noise and absolutely understand the issue. So Mr. Lumby's main concern is to improve his already admirable quality of life by eliminating a minor irritant which detracts from his enjoyment of sitting out in his garden on a sunny Sunday afternoon while his chum is happy to sail close to the wind by spending taxpayers' money to promote a Conservative Party candidate in a local election. Happily, none of this matters. Hopefully Mr. Hollingbury will lose his seat in the forthcoming constituency boundary changes, and Mr. Lumby, who I've met once and is clearly a pleasant and charming man, with experience will become older and wiser, particularly when it comes to drafting election circulars. Vincent Chambers, Shoe Lane, Upham.
This letter is about parking problems in the Highcliffe area and comes from Councillor Lisa Griffiths. She holds the portfolio for health and well-being in the City Council. She's also ward councillor for Alresford and Itchen Valley, and lives in Bishop Sutton Road, Alresford. Sir, Winchester City Council has been very clear that parking changes will occur in the Highcliffe area as soon as we have undertaken the legally required consultations. We'll then feedback what we heard and we'll let people know what road traffic orders we need to put in place to provide better parking for residents. This consultation is set to start in the coming weeks. We are listening to residents on this issue. We know that at times it's difficult for the bus to travel around the area, that residents sometimes cannot park when they come home from work or their driveways are blocked. This is why we envisage amending parking permit times, adding new yellow lines and traffic enforcement to solve these problems. In the meantime, the football club is fully committed to managing the parking when they use the King George V playing field. It knows the guidelines and will learn from the first few weekends because it wants to be able to live happily side by side with local people. The university also needs to ensure their track users park in the right place. We are implementing parts of the design framework already for this area. Building the footpath across the Hampshire County Council land will start soon, and temporary pedestrian access will be put in near the Bar End Park and Ride to provide an easy route through to the King George V playing field to encourage use of this service. All these initiatives will make Highcliffe residents' lives easier.
This letter from Moira Redmond is headed Opportunities. Message to the reader who wrote about a lonely city. Chronicle Letters, September the 13th. I hope many people will write with ideas and suggestions. I know there are many sociable, volunteering opportunities available in Winchester. For starters, all the churches will run social events which will be open to all, of any faith or none, and will also offer volunteering opportunities. My own church, St. Peter's in Drury Street, offers a pie club once a month. That's home-cooked food and good company and conversation, second Wednesday of the month, and hosts a community cafe every Thursday, both open to all and a great chance to meet people and chat. We'd be delighted if this gentleman turned up to either or to any of the other events held in the church and pastoral centre next door. Moira Redmond, Christchurch Road, Winchester.
This letter from a retired GP is about assisted dying. Sir, I write in support of Sarah Ashcroft's plea that our MP Steve Brine reconsiders his position on assisted dying. Chronicle Letters, September 20. For many years, I worked as a GP in the Winchester area, and before that, as part of my training, I spent a year working in St. Joseph's Hospice, Hackney. Thanks to skills acquired there, and to a wonderful team of district nurses attached to the surgery, I think that we gave great care to those dying of cancer. But one can't be sure. Only the living can thank you. There are many other people dying of non-cancerous conditions who wish to end their lives with the dignity afforded to those with cancer. There were several occasions in my career when people requested a simple means of death. Barbiturate tablets used to do it in the 1950s, but I was unable to help. Like all doctors, I've seen my fair share of people attempting to kill themselves by clumsy means and sometimes succeeding, but it's never pretty for the victim nor their attendants. The means of death often speaks volumes. I realise that this is an unpalatable subject, but just as an early abortion can now be performed by any competent doctor using just two tablets, so there is no medical need for sick, and I realise that this needs further definition, people to spend a fortune travelling abroad to die by injection. I'm a member of an organisation called Dignity in Dying who campaign for a change in the law. John O'Sullivan, retired GP, Hursley.
Right, thank you very much for all of those. And now it's your say. And with the government considering raising fuel duty charges for the first time in 8 years, the Chronicle roving reporter asked people what they thought of this. Richard, please.
And Ryan Dickinson, 37, of Wolf Close, Winchester, who works in the highway industry, said, I can see why they're trying to stop people driving as much, but local transport isn't cheap and neither are electric cars. And there's a lack of charging ports. Caroline Perkins of Loveden Lane, Kingsworthy, a health expert at Cupboard of Health, said, "Of course there should be. People should take more public transport or walk. It's a good idea to get people healthier." Antonia Goddard, 36, of Twyford, training manager at Wichester Coffee School, said, "Considering what's coming ahead with Brexit, Brits have enough of an atrocious future already. I think they just need to give us a break." And Deborah Hill of Brassey Road, Fulford, a part-time librarian at the Winchester Discovery Centre, said, "I didn't know, but it could be a good thing if the bus services are extended. But Winchester not doing that, so who knows?"
Thank
I agree
you,
with that. Who knows? With Brexit coming, who knows?
So do you have an opinion on the fuel charges?
Oh, if it were part of a properly planned strategy for public transport, it might well be a good idea. But as it stands, it doesn't seem to me to be a very good idea at all.
Yeah. Pity that didn't come up, really. But yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. Now then, if you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, and you could even drop in when you're in Winchester. So it's on to editorial comment now, and this week the editor picks up the story on the Hospital Trust, and he begins, "The Hospital Trust must prove itself worthy." Most of us love the NHS. Many have tales to tell of life-saving treatments and the skill, devotion and kindness of its staff. However, many of us also have experienced long waits for appointments and operations and sometimes a less than caring attitude. The NHS is a bit like a restaurant. One evening the food and service are great, but on the other hand, it's a bit crowded and the staff don't seem able to keep up with the orders, and there's someone different doing the cooking. However, a hospital must be on top of its game all the time. The CQC has told Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the other facilities under the control of Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust that it has found shortfalls in the way the trust manages safety, effectiveness and responsiveness, as reported on the front page. This includes failures to protect patients' privacy and dignity and treating patients on corridors. What is particularly worrying about the CQC report was that the board was not always aware of these problems. Obviously, like the rest of the NHS, the trust is probably under pressure and underfinanced. But this sounds like a failure of management. It's up to the trust's board, through its managers, to sort out problems as they occur. In this case, it seems the CQC has had to tell them how to do their job.
This is written by George Hayter and is entitled, "I'm typing this as fast as I can." Speed is of the essence in this week's column because Britain is facing a productivity crisis. This country is failing to keep up with its global competitors. We need to increase the value of goods and services that we produce for each hour that we work. I'm doing something about the problem. What you're about to read is an attempt to boost my personal productivity. You can monitor my effectiveness by assessing the reading enjoyment that I produce. At the heart of the experiment, which could point the way to new efficiency for the nation's economy, is that I am reducing the time I spend on creating this column. Instead of my customary 4 hours of preliminary planning, procrastination, tea-making, and aimless internet browsing, this time I have got straight down to typing. I've eliminated the preliminary thought that normally goes into all opinion columns. and it seems to be working. It has taken me barely 16 minutes to type this much. The speed of simultaneous thought and typing is a dizzying experience for me, and I know economists across Britain will look to Winchester after I have shown the way to greater prosperity. Normally, I would suffer a crisis of confidence at this point. I would read through what I have already typed, decide it's rubbish, delete it from the computer, and start again. No time for that in a productivity crisis. This time, for the sake of the UK economy, I am pressing on with what I have done. No time to go back and read through. All I can do is hope the quality is okay with you. Sorry, my productivity relapsed during the interlude since I typed the last paragraph. I spent those 10 minutes staring blankly at the wall in front of me. I'm typing again now. There are many measures of productivity, I'm told. An appropriate measure for journalistic productivity should include some metric of quality. Obviously, I can't be allowed to get away with filling up the column by typing the alphabet over and over again, or leaning on a character like this. No, reader satisfaction must come into the equation, along the lines of hours of reader enjoyment, divided by hours of writer effort. So can I ask you to read slowly? Take your time. Read everything twice, if you like. The longer you take to read the column, the more productive I become. By kindly slowing down, you boost the hours of reading pleasure that I produce. Low productivity is one reason why pay hasn't kept up with inflation. Now that my productivity has gone up, no doubt the editor will consider me for a well-deserved pay rise. I hope my experiment doesn't backfire. A common way of upping productivity is to increase automation. Introducing robots to perform repetitive tasks requires investment, but can reduce labour costs. It's possible that the editor will decide to replace me with a robot after reading this article. I will only have myself to blame. I had better try to achieve robot standard before I get to the end. But I haven't left myself much room. Normally, I would read through the whole thing again and make improvements, but productivity rules mean I have to leave any spelling mistakes. Rembrandt didn't hesitate to overpaint his mistakes, and I'm sure Shakespeare crossed things out occasionally. No time for faint-hearted revision these days. I seem to have upped my productivity considerably. It's only taken me about 2 hours. Normally, I think about what I'm going to write for days. Then, after I've written the column, I go back a day or two later and read it afresh to check it makes sense. Sorry, I don't have time to do that this time. I would like to have put more effort into this week's column, but we all have to increase our productivity.
Thank you, David. So, therefore, we must move on. And this next item is, three items, haven't we, from Belgarum. And Claire with the first, please.
George VI sells for £200. Traders at Molly's Den in Winchester had a brush with royalty when a signed photo of George VI went on sale. Trader Lindsay Walton from Farnham found the photograph of the king at a car boot sale many years ago, and for years he looked regally down from the wall of their dining room. Lindsay said the photo was unusual due to the bespoke uniform the king was wearing. Lindsay, who started trading at Molly's Den Vintage Emporium in Winchester in March, said she wanted to sell it so that someone else could enjoy it. The photo sold for £200. She said, "I didn't expect to sell it. I was quite happy for people to just admire it. It's interesting and it's nice for people to be able to see it." An avid antiques fan, she said she loves to collect items, and taking up a shop at Molly's Den had been a great way to sell her treasured items and make space to buy some more. Excuse me. "We moved in to a small pitch in March, and it's grown in a short space of time. It's great for me. It's not something I wanted to do online. I really do believe Molly's Den is bucking the trend in retail. It's great if you want something different and want an afternoon out. It's a tactile experience. I think people are missing that. They don't know what they will get half the time.
Thank you.
Tech struggles strike again. Just months after some councillors struggled to get to grips with reports and documents being displayed on their Winchester City Council issued tablets in a bid to save on printing, the council was once again held up by their technological push forward. Last week's planning committee was delayed a couple of times as officers struggling to share their presentations between different computers around the Guildhall, meaning the committee was left idly waiting for the help of the authority's IT technicians to save the day. Bulgarm is sure the solution was more sophisticated than simply switching it on and off again, but after a 35-minute delay and several people chipping in to help, proceedings continued relatively uninterrupted. Belgarum doesn't necessarily agree with Councillor Eileen Berry's sentiments when she said, "The more we advance, the more we step back," but understands where she's coming from. And I'm sure many readers will do too.
Thank you.
This is entitled Hidden in Plain Sight. It's strange how things can be hidden in plain sight. The BT building on Upper Brook Street is one such example. Completed in 1940, it is a very large building that somehow seems to be almost invisible. Certainly imposing, but easy to forget it is there at all. The interesting thing is that it would appear to be vital to BT today, even though technology has moved quite a bit from the 1940s to today's ultra-fast broadband. One would have thought such a site in the centre of Winchester would be worth an absolute fortune for redevelopment.
Thank you very much, and thank you all. And on now to historical items, and that's with the usual mini-news clips from 200 years ago. And I have that one, 200 years ago, Monday, September the 28th, 1818. Twyford. Mary Young most respectfully returns thanks to her friends for her favours during the many years she has carried on the business of a maltster, etc., and begs to inform them that she has declined business in favour of her son, Peter Young, whom she humbly begs to recommend their countenances and support. The second item, on Monday last, Paul A. St John Mildmay, Esquire, MP, was chosen to fill the office of Mayor of the city for the next year, and Mr. Alderman Silverman was elected Chamberlain, Mr. John Flight and Mr. William Butt were also appointed bailiffs. In the afternoon, the mayor and corporation and a numerous party amounting to nearly 200 assembled at St. John's House, where an excellent and elegant dinner was provided according to its annual custom.
100 years ago, Saturday, September the 28th, 1918. A meeting of the Winchester branch of the NUR was held at the Oddfellows Hall, Winchester, on Wednesday evening, the principal business being the consideration of the recent settlement arrived at by the executive of the NUR and the government as to wages of railway workers and also the situation caused by the locomotive men's strike. The branch secretary, Mr. Kent, read the conditions of the settlement and paid a warm tribute to the strenuous labours of the General Secretary, Mr. J. H. Thomas, on their behalf. In his opinion, he said, the settlement was a satisfactory one and reflected great credit upon Mr. Thomas. Upon the top of it had come the disgraceful action of a section of the railwaymen in stopping work and so disorganising industry everywhere. Second item, Military Cross, 2nd Lieutenant C.B.M. Abbott, Hampshire Regiment. When his company, advancing through a wood, was held up by machine gun fire, this officer quickly pushed forward two machine guns and beat down the resistance, gaining his objective. He then pushed out posts to his left, strengthening the line when a company had failed to reach his objective, and sent back constant and accurate reports.
and two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, September the 28th, 1968. Seems like only yesterday, isn't it? Attempts by Rear Admiral Morgan Giles, MP for Winchester, and local Otterbourne people to reduce the speed of traffic on the old A33 through the village have failed. They had asked for the 40-mile-an-hour limit to be reduced to 30, but this has been refused. And passing vehicles frequently damage the Plester, a house near the Newton Valence Turning in Selborne, and the committee approved a plan to buy part of the property in order to widen the road. This will enable the blind corner to be removed. The present width of the road being only 17 feet and difficulties experienced by heavy vehicles trying to pass each other. Rear Admiral Tottenham, who had inspected the property with Colonel J.P. Archer-Shee and Lord Woolmer, said it was considered that the requirements for the widening of the road would be met by just the acquisition of the house and the garden, but not by the rest of the property, which was up for sale. The proposed purchase of the property will now go before the County Council's Finance Committee.
25 years ago, Friday, September the 24th, 1993, Winchester City Council has finally made public its multi-million pound budget blunder, which led to around 70 job losses and heavy financial cuts. A detailed report has been published following a year-long inquiry by Chief Executive David Cowan and 10 councillors. It reveals an alarming number of errors by the financial staff since 1990, the result being that the council thought it was some £3.5 million better off than it really was. And the second section, the South Winchester Golf Club failed to open on schedule this week and blamed the good old British weather. No new date has yet been given for the opening. The course was due to come into play on Wednesday, but recent heavy rain delayed essential work, said General Manager Steve Wright. He said the decision not to open was taken reluctantly, but there had been no choice. The rain had softened the ground and prevented the use of heavy equipment required to clear bunkers and import sand without damage to the fairways, he explained. In addition, we are unable to extend the temporary car park while the underlying chalk base is waterlogged. Mr. Wright apologised to the club's long-suffering members, saying that every effort had been made to avoid the situation. All members, now numbering 500, had been notified by post of the delay in opening, and he had been encouraged by the response. It was generally agreed that it was of the utmost importance not to cause lasting damage to the course at this stage.
Thank you all very much. And we're going to take a look at what's on around Winchester and district. And first of all, I'll give you a list of meetings because some of them are really quite good, but they're weekly or monthly. On Fridays, a coffee morning and shop is at the Salvation Army, Parchment Street. That's Winchester SO238AZ if you want a postcode. And it starts at 9 a.m, goes on to 11, and it has stalls and clothes and refreshments. If you want to know more, it's 01962 854 239. And then every Monday, Singing for Wellbeing. That's at the United Church, Jury Street, Winchester, SO23-8RZ. And that's from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. I'll say that again. It's from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and then 11:45 to 1:15 p.m. And those are for people with some memory loss to meet and sing together in a social environment. Partners and carers are invited to attend as well, and it is organised by the Winchester Live at Home scheme. If you want to speak to them, they're on 01962 890 895. 01962 890 895. Now, moving on again to October the 1st, which is very soon, next week, Winchester Catholic History Group, Bishops or Bureaucrats, Thomas Wolsey and Stephen Gardner. It's a talk by Dr. Brian Collins, Winchester Cathedral, and at 7:30 p.m. in the Milner Hall, St. Peter Street. So it's a cathedral-organised event, but in the Milner Hall, St. Peter Street. And as I say, that talk is Catholic History Group and its bishops or bureaucrats, Thomas Wolsey and Stephen Gardner. Finally, on Wednesday, October the 10th, Winchester Horticultural Society, Autumn Bulbs, talk by Tim Woodland. What an appropriate name. Tim Woodland, Winchester Club, Worthy Road, Winchester, SO23 78B. Visitors welcome, and it's an admission fee of £3, and you can get more information on 01962 866 818. So that's the Horticultural Society. There seems to be a dearth of information about theatre activity, except I've got the regular lunchtime concerts here. Winchester Cathedral lunchtime concerts is on Tuesday, October the 2nd, 1 p.m. A lunchtime concert by Lucy Cox, soprano. And that is every Tuesday, and it's very, very, very well worth going along. The cathedral brings hundreds of talented musicians demonstrating skills on almost every instrument possible. All are welcome. The recitals are free with a retiring collection. So that's Winchester Cathedral every Tuesday lunchtime. Aha, but here we have a notice about Winchester pantomime. So everybody's gone into rehearsal, I think, for pantomimes and Christmas shows this year. But Winchester Theatre Royal are announcing Beauty and the Beast. The Theatre Royal Winchester launched its traditional family pantomime, Beauty and the Beast, at the Brook Shopping Centre last weekend. Crowds joined Belle, played by Eleanor Bennett, her father, played by Tim Faulkner, and Gigi the Horse in the centre for an interactive performance of Horsey Horsey. In full costume and character, the cast attracted the attention from adults and children who were visiting the shops. That must have been really exciting. This year's pantomime is being produced by the same in-house production team that brought last year's sell-out run of Peter Pan. Julian Eardley will return as the Dame Dotty, and Ed Thorpe, who was nominated at the Great British Pantomime Awards for his performance as Smee in Peter Pan, returns as Dotty's son, Willie. The theatre will introduce a diverse cast of newcomers, including Nathan Turner, Alice Bonifacio, Sarah Anakin, and Christopher Milnes. Local young performers are also going to be joining the cast on stage. So the very all important information is Beauty and the Beast will start at the Theatre Royal from December the 1st, and it will go on until the 6th of January. The box office there is 01962 840 440. Beauty and the Beast. How can you resist it? Now, before the general news, here are the lighting up times starting on Saturday the 29th of September. The sun will set at 6:48 p.m. And on Wednesday the 2nd of October, the sun will rise at 7:09 a.m. and will set at 6:39 p.m. And now, on to the general news. David, are you ready with your first article, please?
Yes, this one is entitled Jury Slams Police After Dog Attack. Hampshire Constabulary has been slammed by a jury after a police dog attacked a pensioner who later died. Thames Valley and Hampshire forces were criticised for selling the dog to Cleveland police for £500 without fully disclosing that Dano, as he is called, had already bitten 10 people, including one in the face. The family of pensioner Irene Collins, who died who died after she was repeatedly bitten by the dog Dano, have also spoken of their anger after the forces failed to highlight the animal's violent history. Oh. The 73-year-old was a much-loved grandmother who was attacked in her kitchen by the 7-stone German Shepherd, which had been deployed to search her garden for a suspected drug dealer, the inquest heard. She died days after suffering bites to her arm, leg and breast and a broken arm at her home in 2014. Dano's handler, PC Mark Baines, had managed to get the dog to release Mrs. Collins, but it escaped his grasp after being taken into the hallway and returned to bite her leg.
Oh.
Mrs. Collins, there's a picture of her here, but I don't have it in front of me, of Penrith Gardens, Middlesbrough, needed an operation and made an initial good recovery, despite being terminally ill with lung cancer, but then developed pneumonia and died 4 days later. The inquest at Teesside Magistrates Court concluded that she died from natural causes, contributed to by the consequences of the dog bites while the dog was out of control. The panel said information should have been shared as part of the transaction. Following the hearing, her son, Eric Collins, told reporters, "I am very angry with the police. This has been a disgrace on their part." He paid tribute to the mother, saying, "She was the most gentle woman you could ever want to meet." Following the inquest, Assistant Chief Constable Dave Hardcastle, head of the Joint Operations Unit for Hampshire and Thames Valley, said, "Dano was previously a licensed police dog with the Joint Operations Unit. During this time, a number of biting incidents took place which were reviewed and considered proportionate to an operational policing environment. The Joint Operations Unit will consider the findings of the coroner to establish whether any lessons can be learnt. Our thoughts remain with the family of Irene Collins." The Independent Office for Police Conduct added, "PC Baines received a written warning after a misconduct hearing in November last year. No criminal charges were brought." Cleveland Police said since the attack it has altered its policy when acquiring dogs.
Night Shelter thanks its supporters. Winchester Church's Night Shelter hosted a 30th birthday garden party to thank supporters past and present for all their help over the years. The charity, which began in 1988 as a winter shelter occupying vacant buildings, including the building that is now the Bishop on the Bridge pub, were joined by local dignitaries, including MP Steve Bryan and the Mayor, to celebrate 3 decades of its vital work supporting the homeless. Over 80 former and current residents, staff, volunteers and donors enjoyed live music, homemade refreshments and talks at Winchester's historic Milner Hall. Michelle Price, Night Shelter manager, said, "30 years is a huge achievement for a small charity like ours. We estimate that over the 3 decades, first as a winter shelter, then as a permanent year-round shelter after our current premises on Jury Street was established in 1998, that we've offered an incredible 165,000 bed spaces to locally homeless people, a figure that confirms the vital role that Night Shelter plays in the community." She added, "We were delighted to celebrate this fantastic milestone with so many of our supporters, without whom we would not be in a position to help the hundreds of people that we do. Night Shelter has evolved beyond all recognition over the years, both in terms of the quality and breadth of the services we provide."
Campaigners step up new town fight. Campaigners will meet next month to fight plans for a new 6,000 home town north of Winchester. As previously reported, plans for the development near Mitcheldever Station have arisen once again, nearly 30 years after the site was first proposed. The family of John Magnier, the Irish bloodstock multimillionaire, has suggested the potential of the site to the City Council as it conducts a review of its local plan. The Magniers bought the Sutton Scotney estate a couple of years ago for a reported £45 million. £45 million from Zurich Insurance. Since 1990, numerous attempts to have the land earmarked for a new town of up to 12,500 houses have been defeated. The proposed site this time is smaller, lying south of Blackwood, east of the mainline railway and west of the A33. Now the Diva Society, set up to fight the original scheme, will host a public meeting to rally support against the plans. Tessa Robertson, chairman of the Society, previously told the Chronicle, "All we have had in confirmation is from the City Council strategic planning is that a proposal has gone into them. We know nothing more." It is a very large scheme. Development has been proposed since 1990. We have fought it. The whole area is opposed to it. It is the wrong kind of housing in the wrong place. Since 1990, we have been fortunate to have the support of Winchester City Council. Meanwhile, tenant farmer Douglas Patterson, former Diva Society chairman, said, "I think and hope it's mainly a case of the Magniers trying to keep their hope value alive. It has arisen as a last-minute response to the council's call for sites, in which they invite proposals to come forward before producing a long-term plan." William Helen, Micheldever Parish Council chairman, added, "This is a substantial development in an area which should not be developed." The Diva Society meeting will take place at 7:30 p.m. on Monday, October the 8th, at the Warren Centre.
This is entitled "Austin Bench Makes a Return to the Guildhall." The Jane Austen Memorial Bench has returned to Winchester. Visitors and residents of the city can once again admire the memorabilia dedicated to the writer, which has now taken up residence outside the Mayor's official residence, Abbey House. The Jane Austen 200 bench was commissioned by Winchester City Council and carved by local sculptor Nicola Henshaw to commemorate the 200-year anniversary of Austen's death. Children at Winnell Primary School were selected to help design the bench. Before its current location, the memorial was displayed outside Winchester College for a few weeks. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the City Council, said, "This unique addition to the Broadway enhances the welcome to the city and reminds people of Winchester's rich history and links with the globally celebrated author, Jane Austen."
Listed status granted for iconic city centre sculpture. One of Winchester's best-known statues has been listed as an important 20th century public sculpture by Historic England. The Horse and Rider sculpture by Dame Elizabeth Frink has been standing on the High Street since the early 1980s. Historic England says the listings is for several reasons, including its high artistic and aesthetic quality, cast in bronze from plaster, and its historic interest as a piece originally commissioned by a commercial developer from the internationally renowned artist Dame Elizabeth Frink. The cast in Winchester was erected in 1983. It was the last of the three casts and was initially loaned to Hampshire County Council by Elizabeth Frink's agent Leslie Waddington for a summer open-air exhibition. Christopher Gordon, the former county arts officer, initiated the application to have the statue listed. He said, "When Historic England announced in early 2016 that it had awarded Grade 1 and 2 listings to over 40 important post-1945 public sculptures, I was so pleased to see that Elizabeth Frink's Horse and Rider was included, but only its London bronze casting. Knowing that the sculpture exists in an edition of three, one is in the USA, I contacted Historic England to suggest that the Winchester cast should really also be afforded the same level of national protection. The London statue has quite recently been moved from its somewhat degraded original site at Green Park. but I knew from my close involvement in organising the 1981 Hampshire County Council Open Air Exhibition that the artist herself was particularly happy about the Winchester location and the sighting of the loaned work.
Nearly 200 homes given the go-ahead. Nearly 200 homes will be built in Bishop's Waltham after two separate schemes were approved by councillors. However, concerns were raised about a lack of consultation and firm details regarding one of the developments, which led to the former mayor and member of the planning committee walking out of the meeting. The decision by the Winchester City Council Committee now means that 125 homes will be built on Albany Farm, while 66 will go on land east of Tangier Lane. Councillors first debated the Albany Farm scheme, which Bishop's Waltham Parish Council objected to, with one of the reasons being a lack of consultation. Robert Shields, representing the Parish Council, said, "This development is the largest in over 20 years. We have got to get it right for future residents. The Parish Council would like to record its disappointment that this developer failed to realise that consultation is a two-way corridor. The main issue related the management of an open space known as the paddock. Developers had planned to offer the space to the parish council to manage, and if they declined, it would go to a private company. But Councillor Shields said that the council had not had the chance to consider, as it had not been told. When questioned by the committee, Agent James Isles, on behalf of Southcott Homes and Bargate Homes, disputed claims of a lack of consultation and said they had held meetings with the parish council. Former Mayor Councillor David McLean then raised a concern about a separate area, the management of which was unclear. Councillor McLean, proposed a motion to defer a decision until all the details had been confirmed, but was defeated, with Winchester City Council Planning and Information Solicitor Fiona Sutherland saying permission could be granted subject to a variation of their legal agreement to resolve the issue. "There's still a lot hanging in the air," said Councillor McLean. "I'm hoping I'm not making a mistake when I follow your advice." The scheme was approved by 6-2, Councillor McLean and Councillor Brian Laming voting against. Committee members then moved to the Tangier Lane scheme, but were halted by what appeared to be a heated discussion between Councillor McLean and Ms. Sutherland before they both left the meeting. Councillor McLean returned to the room around 10 minutes later, but sat with members of the public during the Tangier Lane debate. By contrast, councillors praised the work of applicant Crest Nicholson on the Tangier Lane scheme, which the Parish Council supported. Councillor Laming said, "What a marked contrast to the planning application we have just heard." While Councillor Richard Izzard added, "It's really good you have consultation with the Parish Council, so thank you." Councillors unanimously approved the plans.
A famous musician cut the ribbon to a state-of-the-art studio in Winchester earlier this month. Andy Burrows, former Razorlight drummer and now a successful solo artist, was on hand to unveil Winchester Theatre Arts' new rehearsal space in Kingsworthy. As a previous student of the school, Andy was happy to return and brought his daughter along to celebrate. Principal Claire Godwin said, "It was great to have Andy back. He said the school gave him a lot of confidence. Just before Razorlight were about to go number one, he phoned me to let me know." Claire started the school 42 years ago and now has about 170 students learning at the Winchester Theatre Arts. She said, "I'm very excited about this new studio. Since starting up the school, it's all I've ever wanted. The new place is behind the hall we always use, so it means we can all stay in one place. I'm hoping this development brings in new students to join our family.
County's community groups celebrated at awards ceremony. Community groups working to improve Hampshire's countryside have been recognised at an annual award ceremony. Among the winners at the CPRE Hampshire Countryside Awards held in Littleton was Winchester City Council. Judges rewarded the authority for its Hilliers Haven project, which saw £100,000 invested in creating a new green space in Abbots Barton. As previously reported, Hilliers Haven opened in March and includes paths through the woodland, a meadow area with stone fire pits, bird and bat boxes, and a sculpture trail. The project won the Making Places title. Speaking at the project launch earlier this year, Susan Croker, Head of Landscape and Open Spaces at the Council, said, "We hope visitors to Hilliers Haven will enjoy the new range of facilities and be encouraged to visit again and explore the great open spaces in the city and district." Other winners included the Oasis Down to Earth Farm in Southampton, a non-profit charity based in an urban farm, and Beechcroft Farm in Sarum Road, Winchester. New for this year was the Hampshire's Choice Award. This gave the public the chance to vote for their favourite project out of the finalists, with the winner taking home £500. The prize was secured by Winchester Youth Counselling's Nature Therapy Project, which supports young people's emotional health and well-being using the natural environment. Winchester Youth Counselling's Jill Guppy said, "We were delighted to have won this award. It means so much to us and the young people we work with. It'll give them a real boost of confidence to attend the ceremony."
More awards. This one, an award which was won by the Hursley Pub. A Hampshire watering hole has won the Best Managed Pub accolade at a prestigious award ceremony. The King's Head in Hursley was awarded Best in Category at the John Smith's Great British Pub Awards earlier this month. The pub received a plaque at a ceremony which took place at the Royal Lancaster Hotel in Kensington. Mark Thornhill of the King's Head said, "It's a real honour for the King's Head to be recognised by what we like to call the Oscars of our industry. We are incredibly proud of the entire King's Head team, and this award reflects their hard work. The King's Head is part of the Epicurean Collection and has been the winner of a range of awards in recent years, including Best Pub in Hampshire 2016, 2017 and 2018 in the National Pub and Bar Awards.
Thousands of runners battled wet and wintry conditions as the annual Winchester Half Marathon returned. An amber weather warning was withdrawn just hours before the race as fears that runners would be battered by winds subsided. The build-up was marred by torrential rain which kept some spectators away. Conditions improved as the runners set off from Winchester Guildhall. The 13.1-mile race was won by London-based software tester Tom Clark, who was taking part in his first half marathon. Tom, who ran in the Winchester 10K earlier this year, finished in 1 hour 14 minutes. After being congratulated by Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson, Tom said, "The hills were quite tough, but the rest of it felt okay. It was nice." The race provided runners with a scenic tour of the district, with the route including landmarks such as St Catherine's Hill, the Cathedral and the King Alfred statue. Sandy McDougall was the first woman across the line. Also among those taking part were members of Winchester Churches Together, who were running in support of the Winchester Hospice Appeal. Funds raised for the hospice will provide 10 inpatient beds offering local palliative and end-of-life care for patients with life-limiting illnesses and their families.
And a different pub story. Landlord puts his pub up for sale. An award-winning Hampshire landlord has decided to sell his pub after 14 years. Tim Gray, who was the named Landlord of the Year in both 2010 and 2014, runs the Yew Tree in Lower Weald near Alresford. Despite turning the pub into a highly successful prospect, the 50-year-old has put the leasehold on the market with an asking price of £145,000. Tim said, "I've had a perfect time, 14 fantastic years, but it's time to move on. I'm not sure where yet. It's not like your everyday job where you can think where you want to go and then leave. I need to sell the pub first. The future of the building has not yet been decided either." Richard Wood of Christian Company, handling the sale, said, "We've had bits of interest, but it's very early. It's only been on the market for just over a month, and these sales take several months. However, it's been incredibly run by Tim, and we hope to sell the property to another publican. The yew tree occupies a two-storey detached property directly opposite the Lower Weald Village cricket pitch. It's named after the old yew tree growing outside and sits on a remote lane in the countryside. The pub also features a two-bedroom owner's accommodation. It's become a very popular pub in the area, with Tim's name still featuring in the Good Pub Guide competitions. Tim appeared as a runner-up in the Landlord of the Year 2018 competition and has been shortlisted again for 2019.
TV's Hugh helps Haven. Actor Hugh Bonneville was on hand to launch a new flower wall at Breast Cancer Haven, Wessex. The Downton Abbey and Paddington star helped highlight Breast Cancer Awareness Month at the Haven in Titchfield. The wall has been funded by the Rare Brand Market and created with the help of florist Susie Babington. Covering the front of their Titchfield Centre, this large-scale display of locally sourced in-season flowers mirrors the Breast Cancer Haven brand's colours. The Rare Brand Market founder Emma Schwartz said, "I am thrilled to champion independent florist Susie Babington and reflect the inspiring and positive work carried out by Breast Cancer Haven Wessex. My mother is currently receiving help from Breast Cancer Haven after a second diagnosis of breast cancer, so this is an association very close to my own heart. Breast Cancer Haven Wessex opened its welcoming centre in Titchfield in 2015. It is from here that counsellors, therapists and health professionals offer the support needed to help individuals facing the challenge of living with breast cancer." Florist Susie said, "Having been the primary carer to my mother during her battle with cancer, I was delighted to lend a hand to this project to raise awareness of the disease, which sadly affects so many of us today, either directly or indirectly, and of the Breast Cancer Haven, which supports not only the patient but the family too. So important during difficult times. Breast Cancer Awareness Month runs throughout the whole of October."
A Kingsworthy family may have to rip down their loft conversion despite not receiving a single objection against the retrospective plans. The planning application for 17 Sycamore Drive in Kingsworthy was brought to Winchester City Council's planning committee last week after receiving six letters of support from neighbours. However, the scheme recommended for refusal by city planning officers was rejected by committee chairman Councillor Lawrence Ruffle after councillors were tied 4-4. Addressing the committee, applicant Andrew Mant said, "We need the increase in space because we have two growing children." He added that they also needed space for family members to stay over when helping with childcare, and they believed the work had been carried out under permitted development rights. The meeting heard from planning officers that permitted development rights had been removed for the house some years ago. Councillor Jane Rutter said, "I think we need to look at this with fresh eyes. Under current permitted development rights, this would have been allowed. There is no harm to the area. Why can't we allow this when it would cause significant harm to the family to pull this down?" However, Councillor Eileen Berry said, "It's obviously out of character. I can't help but think there are other ways of doing this."
Thank you, everyone. And that concludes our selection of news from the Hampshire Chronicle for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number, again, is 02-0380-273-473. And we'd like to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And, of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And David.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And from me, Roz, this is me saying goodbye until next time. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And we'd like to wish you a happy week. Thank you for joining us, and you'll hear us soon. Goodbye.